Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Jericho Network on Westwood One. All right, the third member of the Useless Trivia Triumvirate is on Talk is Jericho. Of course, the Useless Trivia Triumvirate, Jericho, Raven, and Conan. And while he may throw a few bigger words around during this podcast, he's not dropping too much useless trivia, not today. But today, it's all about wrestling with Conan. We're talking about our early days in Mexico together, circa 1993, 1994. You hear some more stories with the infamous Plaza Madrid gang, what the AAA promotion was like back then, what the CMLL promotion was like back then. We'll get into WCW, the NWO, WWE, talk a little Lucha Underground. Conan is working with them right now. Conan's also talking in-ring psychology, how he got his start in the business, who came up with his gimmick, and what he learned from Bobby the Brain Heenan. And you've heard a lot about Love Machine, Art Barr. Conan is the one who discovered him and brought him to Mexico. You hear about Art. You hear all about Conan. So many great stories to tell. But before we get started, I want to tell you how you can win a copy of the DDP Workout Program signed by the man, Diamond Dallas Page himself. Just tweet me your own DDP yoga success story to @TalkIsJericho. Use the hashtag #podcast1. And one lucky winner will get that autographed copy of DDP Yoga. You all know how much I believe in DDP Yoga, how much I love it. I do DDP Yoga myself. I know how much it's helped me. It's the only reason why I'm still performing at the top of my game in the WWE when I do, and why I'm able to rock with Fozzy on the Cinderblock Party Tour harder than ever. DDP Yoga is a great program for anyone. Can help any age, any fitness level. No matter what you got going on, DDP Yoga can help you. All you got to do is give it a try, all right? That's what Eric Thacker did. He had nothing to lose and everything to gain after tipping the scales at 448 pounds. That is so unhealthy, not good. Eric was on the brink of bad health, and worse, possibly death. I mean, you start getting that big, it's a heart attack city, right? His doctor warned him if Eric didn't do something about his weight and start taking care of himself, he would suffer dire consequences. So Eric started DDP Yoga. He started doing it. 1 month into the program, he lost 30 pounds. Okay, I want you to think about any weight loss program you've heard about, any workout program you've heard about, where you're going to lose 1 pound a month. Eric did that with DDP Yoga. And then in his second month, at the end of the 2 months, he was down 55 pounds. That's right. Not only was Eric losing weight, he'd accomplished something he'd never done before. He did his first push-up ever. May not seem like a lot to all of you, but for Eric, who was 400-odd pounds, 450, whatever it was, his first push-up was a huge, huge, huge testament to how good he'd been doing, how much he had done. A huge milestone was what I was looking for. And now, in 1 year, Eric lost 185 pounds. That's right. 185 pounds in 1 year, 12 months, 52 weeks, 365 days. Cliche, cliche, cliche. Eric lost the weight in that time. Not only did he change his life, he reclaimed it. All right? He reclaimed his life. Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga have since helped tens of thousands of people, including me. And if he's helped you, then let me know. Tweet your DDP Yoga story to @TalkIsJericho on the Twitter and use the hashtag #podcast1. And you could win a copy of the DDP Yoga program autographed by the man, Diamond Dallas Page himself. That's right. Just tweet me your DDP Yoga story @TalkIsJericho and use the hashtag #podcast1 and you could win the autographed DDP Yoga program. Winner will be chosen at random. And you still have time to experience your own DDP Yoga story, because if you haven't done it yet and you're on the fence, I've heard a lot about this DDP Yoga. Now you got to try it, man. Get off that butt and go out there and make it happen, because DDP Yoga is making it easy. No excuses. All of you sexy beast Talk is Jericho listeners will get a great deal on DDP Yoga if you go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Take advantage of it. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. No more excuses. Make it happen. If you're in bad shape, if you want to lose some weight, if you want to get in better shape, you want to tone up, DDP Yoga is the way to go. I'm telling you from experience, go check it out today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Okay, so I haven't seen you in like, I don't know how long it's been, 5 years, 6 years. The moment I see you come in the door, you're on the phone, you got your entourage, you got people calling, you got people texting you. You're always on the move, Conan. You always have been. You got lots of stuff going
on. Just like you, always on the move. I see you everywhere. I see you on Tough Enough. I see you in WWE. I see you with your podcast, which I'm pretty sure you stole from my podcast.
I'm not sure if they stole it, is per chance.
See, well, okay. This is the semantics.
I did do yours for like 2 hours. I said I only got about 30 minutes.
Yeah, you were driving from a city to another city in the car. And you were like, all right, I got 2 hours to kill. Let me get this motherfucker off my back. Can we curse?
Sure, whatever.
All right. And I would like to just say real quick that this is a very smooth way to get me into your hotel, and it worked.
It did work. And you even brought a guy, too.
Wait. Even the worst part is he goes, would you like to sit by me, which is super gay? Then he goes, would you just like to sit in front of me, or would you like to go to the bed?
sit on the bed. Cool. Yeah.
I like the bed.
Well, get right to the bed. I've known you far too long to worry about that sort of stuff, man. Right. So, yeah, man, like, you come in here. We talked to Mysterio for a few seconds.
Yeah.
You're like, you have gone from being in front of the camera to being a big part behind the scenes in AAA now.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you always were like that even when you were working. You always had a lot of ideas and that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, it's funny. And that's, I think, what drew us together, because we were very creative. So we were always, you know, dreaming and talking about stuff. And I remember even when we'd be walking down those halls of Plaza Madrid, and which was a hotel that all the boys stayed in Mexico. Please throw some of the luminaries that were there while you were there.
Well, and you can feel free to add some in. Haku.
Yeah.
Love Machine, Art Bar. We got to talk about him. Right. Eddie. Talk about Eddie, of course. Magic, Norman Smiley.
Right.
Miguel Perez.
Right.
Headhunters for a while. The big black twins.
Right.
Big, like,
various
fat
members
guys.
Of the Guerrero family.
Various members. Mondo was there for a bit. Black Cat.
Yes.
Was there for a little while.
Let people know who that is.
He was a, thank you. See, you're a veteran podcaster. Black Cat was a guy who, his name is Victor. He was from Mexico, but he had moved to Japan at an early age and basically had trained most of the New Japan wrestlers and was also very close with Benoit and Eddie and all the guys that went to New Japan. Black Cat was kind of like the liaison between the Japanese and the Gaijins.
Right.
But we had this great hotel filled with all of these miscreants and rogues. And then
wrestlers.
But you would come down and visit. Vampiro once in a while would come down and visit.
He was also there for a while, but I think he was there before you got there.
Yeah, and then he went and got his own apartment. Yeah. Same with Magic, too.
Yeah.
So that was the place to go, was the Plaza Madrid.
Right,
because
from there you went to the strip club or to the bar, or you brought bitches over, or a little bit of three.
Los Bulldog was the name of the nightclub.
Bulldogs, yeah.
But that was
the
place.
You don't have to put Los in front of everything. It's just called Bulldogs.
I thought it was called Los Bulldog.
No. Okay. So anyways, that's awesome.
It never quits, right? Yeah. This is the best thing, and this is what I love when you see your old friends. It's like you haven't missed a day. Just right to the ball busting right away.
We haven't talked really in a long time. We don't really keep in contact.
Time.
That's how we are, right?
Yeah.
But when we do see each other, it's like right back in the saddle. Fuck it.
You know.
But I remember walking down those halls, the same halls that Art Bar accused you of eating a piece of pizza off of somebody's plate. Is that urban legend or not? I brought that up back then, so it isn't something you're hearing for the first time. Remember, Art Bar always used to bust your balls. Because he says that one time you're walking down the hall and somebody had left some pizza,
room service on a tray.
Yeah, room service, right. And you just went and took a bite out of
it. It's quite possible. And I'm sure there was probably a lot of booze and drugs probably involved too. So yes, I'm guilty of this.
Yes. So you know, we're getting back to your question. I ain't afraid to derail for a minute, but we were always be talking. I remember back then you always used to tell me that you had been in a rock band and that you wanted to play rock and all that. So it's cool that you're living out your dream. Remember back then when Bam told us he was in a rock band and he was also kicked out of the hockey league for his hair being too long?
Yeah, a bouncer for Milli Vanilli
bouncer
was
for
another
Billy
one.
And security guard, and saw one jump to his death off the balcony.
Right. Yeah, he had a lot of stories, didn't he? Yeah, he did. Yeah, he actually started a band for a couple minutes in Mexico City.
Yeah.
I think it was called the Theater of the Vampire. And I'm not sure if they actually played songs, but he did actually have a band.
I would never think that something with him in it would have his name in it, too.
It was weird, right? Yeah. But anyway,
so I get B. So anyways, I've always thought we were very creative also. And that's one of the things I think that, you know, we were always kicking it and having fun. Because I remember Kevin Sullivan, and I was telling you this before. Kevin Sullivan once told me, he goes, I think you and Chris Jericho will in the future be like writing or producing TV. You know, and I'm already behind the scenes, and you're doing shit with TV,
it's
too.
It's interesting that he said that. I never really had much of a relationship with Sullivan. Yeah. He must have just picked that up. Were you pretty close with him?
Yeah. Well, he's the guy that brought me into WCW.
Got it.
So when I first came in, I was like in Dungeon of Doom, and then I was like, which was his little group.
Yeah.
So I was like, let me get all the guys that aren't really doing anything, and let me stick them in this group. So I was one of them. But he helped me out a lot. And so, so now I've transitioned behind the scenes, and... I always kind of knew there wasn't anything that really startled me that much, because when AAA first started, the Mexican promotion, probably 23 years ago, like the first 4 years, everything, which I think were our best years, everything that we produced or we wrote was just me and Antonio Peña. You know, and it's kind of funny because I was talking one time to Vince Russo. And I was asking, would you work with Jeff Jarrett again? And he goes, no, because I can't work in wrestling again. And I know exactly what he means, because I go through the same thing right now. He goes, because now your ideas go through too many filters. So when he was working, it was just him, Ed, and Vince McMahon. That was it. When I was working, it was just me and Peña. That was it. Now I have to work with three other people. And just one person doesn't like something, that's already a battle. And if two doesn't like it, that's a double, three. You know what I'm saying?
It's a lot better to get your vision if there's only two people to co-write with. Lennon and McCartney.
It
wasn't Lennon, McCartney, and Johnson and Smith and Jones and McGee, whatever. Right.
Or same thing with a director, you know. It's Scorsese.
So when you first started working with Peña, because you mentioned how AAA became so huge very quickly, too.
Yep.
Was it... it was a pretty big deal when you guys split off. It was like a big, like almost like you could never blackballed almost in a lot of ways.
For the
right?
people, again, we were in this company called the CMLL, Arena Mexico, as it's more famously known as. And we just, like a whole bunch of us, we just left. And we didn't even tell the office we were leaving. We just left.
Why did you leave?
Well, the main two reasons was Peña was doing a lot of work, Antonio Peña. For Paco Alonso, he was doing like he had gotten him movies. He had gotten us on TV. He had come up with all the new, like he really gave Vampiro his first push. You know, he helped me, and he came out with like the minis. You've seen that they're like little wrestlers, little people.
Yeah, like we have them now, like Torito with the Matadors.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so he discovered that, which was ingenious, because what he did is like if there was a guy that looked like you. And he was a wrestler. He'd call him Little Chris Jericho or some shit like that. And it was hilarious, you know. And then so they had Octagoncito, which is the diminutive term for that. So that was very, you know, never been seen.
So that
seen.
Was Peña's
That was Peña's
invention.
Brainchild, right? Wow. And came up with such people as Octagon and Volador and Misterioso and Máscara Sagrada. And for Lucha fans, you know who they are, La Parka. You know, he came up with all those
gimmicks. He was making the gimmicks and drawing the costumes.
So he was doing all that. You know, he was doing a lot of things. He really was. He was tremendously ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had made this thing called the CMLL title, because in Mexico back then, if you weren't Mexican, you couldn't hold the Mexican heavyweight, the Mexican national title.
Oh, because the commission was really stiff.
Right.
Like, they would actually weigh you as well. Still?
Right. No, not anymore.
You would have to be weighed for the middle, you know, the middleweight title. You had to be a certain amount of weight, and if you weren't, you couldn't wrestle for it.
Right. So they really tried to give him as much realism as they could. So to them, the Mexican national championship, why would a foreigner have that if it's a national championship? So they stuck to that. Mm-hmm. So they actually came up with the CMLL title, because at that time, me and Vampiro were so hot. They wanted to have, you know, so we had something. And so the first tournament they ever had, I won. And so I was the first champion. And Peña had like his crew. And when you were there, I don't know if you remember Juan Herrera.
Yeah, he was one of the bookers.
Yeah. Right. Well, Juan Herrera had his crew. They were mostly wrestlers from Guadalajara. Fuerza Guerrera, Bestia Salvaje, Atlantis, Rayo de Jalisco, those cats. But Peña's crew was like, we were like really getting over with the crowd, and there was a lot of jealousy. So you remember how every Monday you had to go to the second floor and check the list to see what towns you had?
Yeah, the second floor of the office.
Right.
They have a little list on the wall, like on a clipboard almost, and you flip through it and see. How was it? It would be like, would it say Conan and have your towns beside it?
No. It would say the city and then who was in that city.
Who was on it, right.
Right, and who you were wrestling. And then what time the bus left and all that shit.
Always be a lineup of all these idiots waiting to get in. Hey, let me see. Come on, let me check it out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you would go up there, and what they would do is they would wait till I would go. And then when I would leave, they would add shit to it. They're like, Conan's missing all these shows. That's how they were getting me back. So they told Paco that I was missing all these shows and I was getting a big head. But, bro, everybody knew I had a big head. So, you know. And so then they had a meeting in Monterey, and they had, like, Paco, your mentor and discoverer, Carlos Elizondo, was there. Monterey, right?
Yeah,
Monterey. That's right. So Carlos Elizondo was there. His right-hand man, I forgot his name, who always wore the glasses, was really cool.
I can see him in my head now, but I can't remember what his name was.
And so they had, like, all the power brokers there. They're like, yeah, I've been getting a lot of complaints about Conan. I want to know who's against him, you know, continuing to hold on to the title.
Were you missing shows?
No, they were adding them when I left. Are you not listening?
Yeah, I was listening.
That's pretty good.
Can we just start from the start? No. Okay, so they're adding it after you left.
Right.
I get it.
So I would go look at the list, right? And my name, and then when I would leave, they would add my name.
I get it. Yeah, I understand.
So
right.
Like, this is missing shows. Like, I went and they weren't there.
Right.
And so, so that was part of the war between Peña and Juan Herrera. There's like a little microcosm, if you will. They're not a bad word for a Latino, by the way.
It's a damn good word.
Yeah.
But you're kind of half Latino, though.
No, I'm full Latino. I mean, my dad's Puerto Rican, my mom's Cuban. That makes me full that I was raised by a white man who's also Puerto Rican. That's another thing.
Yeah, you're like one of those guys like MVP. I'm not sure what your real name is. I don't know what to call you. Just M. I call you K, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's almost like an old NWA, like in the 70s, where they're having a vote on whether or not you should keep the title because of these quote-unquote shows that you were missing.
Right. Mm-hmm. So at that time, you know, they did put the title on me for a reason because I was drawing at that time. So I was like the biggest draw that they had. So every promoter was like, no, don't take it away from him. And even though every single person said no, he said, well, I'm still taking it away from him. And Peña got like really hot and he was like, okay, this is the end. You know, I can see right now that this is going to be a losing battle. So he comes up to me before the show and he goes, this is what happened. You know, I'm leaving. I have a guy in Televisa that's going to back me up. He goes, I'm only asking you and Octagon to come with me, and whoever else wants to come, that's good. He said, just know one thing. If you leave, you will never, ever go back to Arena Mexico, which was true because later on I'll tell you a story when I tried to get work like 12 years later what happened. But and so we just started recluding people and we left.
And you had that much belief in Peña that you – because Arena Mexico is an institution.
Right.
It's a family-owned business where those arenas are owned – by Paco and Paco's family. So if you're leaving, you're not getting back in.
Well, the thing is, he also threw this little caveat.
Nice word for a Latino.
Not a bad word for a Latino.
That's good.
And he said, you know, you're going to help me write. You're going to help me recruit. You're going to help me develop talent. That was like, I didn't even know it. That was kind of like my forte, you know, because I was always trying to recruit people to Arena Mexico.
And this was a long time ago.
Yeah,
because
I brought Magic in and I brought, you know, Love Machine in, and I recruited Negro Casas, and I was always trying to make wherever I was at better.
Hmm.
So once we went to AAA, I was just talking to the, you know, that's where I found Rey Mysterio and Psicosis and all those guys. So I found all these young guys, and then I convinced a whole bunch of veterans, and, you know, and then I was writing with him. So that was awesome because it was filling my creative juices.
Yeah. Was there some, you mentioned Televisa, were they throwing a lot of money into the AAA pot? Because to draw these guys, you must have.
Yeah, because it was one of the top guys at Televisa called Alejandro Burillo, who at one time owned the San Diego Sockers, and he was like this playboy Mexican guy that didn't look like the typical Mexican that you would think. He looked like kind of like a white boy, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And he was just well-educated, but cool playboy, and he was the guy that was helping us out.
Because this is basically right when I started going to Mexico in about 92. This might have happened a little bit earlier, but not too much earlier. Right. And I will say this, you kind of alluded to it, but I can really back you up on this. Probably one of the few times in your life that I'll actually put you over to your face. You and Vampiro were huge, huge stars in Mexico in that late 92, early 93. Like Austin Rock level stars. Maybe even bigger. I don't know. But it was a big, big deal when you left because now we had Vampiro. But Triple A had Conan, and that was legit. It was, you were a big, big star.
Yeah, well, you know, I just think the one thing, bro, that's what I hated about the United States when I got there, because immediately I could see, I'm not saying that I needed to be the top guy anywhere, but give me a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And you suffered the same thing in WCW.
Oh, totally.
You know, we were that one group that was never given a chance. And it's a shame, bro, because you had to go to WWE to become a star. And that's why I always give Vince so much credit, because he saw in you, in Eddie, in Benoit, in Ray, what they didn't want to see in WCW.
You just named four world champions that were never even close to world champion level in WCW, and probably never would have been.
And bro, as presumptuous as this sounds, but that's part of my genetic makeup. I know if I would have gone to WWE, I would have gotten over, because my gimmick was like, you know what I'm saying?
And you had proven that. I said that about Daniel Bryan or a lot of guys when they first came into the WWE. Doesn't matter how long they're suppressed, they're going to get over because they know how. Daniel Bryan has been getting over for years, 10 years. Doesn't matter if it's in a high school gym or in the Tokyo Dome. Over is over, and you did that as well in a lot of different ways. Because when you came to WCW, you totally reinvented your whole, Conan was a musclehead gimmick.
Right, exactly. So, I got into the game, bro, and immediately I went straight to the top. You know, Vampiro went straight to the top when he got to Mexico, and our professional animosity turned personal, and it was just, we're just two biggest stars of our promotions, and we didn't like each other. And in a way, that was good, because it kind of bred competition. I was never going to let him outdo me and vice versa. So it was actually pretty good at the end. But yeah, man, those Mexico years were great. And I remember I was always trying to get you to jump to AAA. And you wouldn't. Why were you so loyal over there? Just because they gave you your first break?
Maybe a little of that, and I was happy there. Okay. And I had a great crew of guys to work with, Negro Casas, Silver King, Tejano, Bestia Salvaje, even like Sangre Chicana, as miserable of a bastard as he was, I still enjoyed working with him. Dandy was tremendous, tremendous. But Los Cowboys.
How much, I know, bro, because I don't know if I said this in my podcast when you were on, but if I did, it's worth repeating. One thing that I had so much respect for you, I remember when Eric Bischoff was going to have you do a match with Juventud Guerrera for his mask, but you understood what that meant in Mexico and how disrespectful it was to be taken the way they were going to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to get into how they do it with Rey Mysterio. Do you remember the match, how he lost his match?
Mysterio or Juve?
Mysterio.
I don't remember how he lost his mask.
Ready? Mysterio and Conan versus Nash and Hall for Mysterio's mask. Okay, first of all, how does that make sense? Okay, why are me and Hall in it?
Right.
Okay, if Mysterio loses, he loses his mask, right?
Right.
If Nash loses, he should lose his hair, right?
Yeah.
What do you think happened? Take a wild guess.
He would have to wear long tights from short tights. I don't know. What do you have to do?
Elizabeth would lose her hair. Really, dude? Their manager, really?
Yeah.
Come on, man. Can you dilute that anymore?
And not to mention, you also know there's no way she's getting her head shaved.
Right, exactly.
So you also know the finish of the match.
Exactly.
You know, because that was Bischoff's thing at the time, was he wanted all the Mexicans to lose the masks, because you can't show emotion or emote or sell or whatever it may be. Because at the time, and I say this all the time, I say it to Oscar, Juve was just as good as Mysterio was in that 98 period. And they were both super over.
Right.
And took both of their masks off,
right,
which was part of the allure of why they were over.
And you want to hear what my idea was, Eric Bischoff, that he shot down?
Right.
My idea was, Eric, Why don't you put Ray against Hoovy? Way better match, around the same age, both second-generation wrestlers. Both of them were Rookie of the Year in Mexico. Both of them are considered the best high flyers. That's going to be a way more compelling match.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't do it, bro.
He just
so
wanted...
we always had heat, always.
With Eric?
Always.
How was that when you came into WCW? Because he started...
He was cool.
Yeah.
The beginning, he was cool. As a matter of fact, he had actually... asked me about you when I first got there, and we had not too long before that done that Peace Festival,
right,
which we actually had a good match.
Yeah, you mean
I know I'm not
Bam
known
Bigelow.
For the
no, that was a good match.
Yeah,
you and me had a couple good matches.
Yeah, yeah. Well, with you, bro, no. It's like pretty embarrassing if you can't have a good match with you. And he had asked me about you, and I go, bro, guys, money. Mm. You know what I'm saying? But when I first got in, he was very cool, very laid back. You know, he really wanted to get WWE's ass,
yeah,
kick their ass, at least be in the same conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he thought he could kick his ass, but he was very ambitious, and he was very easy to talk to. But like anything else, bro, you know, when you've got Piper, who just passed away,
yeah,
and Ultimate Warrior, another brother that passed away, and Nash and Hall and Flair and Sting and fucking
Hogan.
Bret Hart and Hogan and Rodman, who knows who else they fucking, you know, I think they talked to Tyson before we went to, with all that shit. And then he was kind of like a mark for them too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I loved hanging around with them. And yeah, let's go. Like, I hated, bro, and I do mean hated, going to that motorcycle shit. What was
Sturgis.
That called? Sturgis.
Road yeah. Wild or Hog Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably one of the coolest things is you probably met him there too, because you're such a rockophile or rockhead, or what do you guys call yourselves? Just say music lovers, so I sound like a dick.
Yeah. Rockophile, that's a good one.
So, anyways, I met ZZ Top there, and they knew who
yeah.
I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
big wrestling fans.
Yeah, like, really? You know who I am? I always thought it was hilarious how racial they got when Booker T and Stevie Ray went out there.
Mm.
Oh, that was brutal.
Oh, the motorcycle guys.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, you're
brutal.
Dealing with hardcore.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I remember I wore a kimono out and said that I enjoyed riding my Honda around the town, and I got booed out of the parking lot. Like, they wanted to kill me.
So the thing sucked because it was far away from the hotel.
You
couldn't go on your own because everybody's used to getting there in your car. So you had to get on a bus like you were in school.
Yeah.
Then you went there and the trailer's out in the mud.
Yeah, you're fucking in the middle of a parking lot.
Right, bro. It was brutal.
Yeah.
And so anyways, it was almost, to me, it was like they didn't even sell tickets.
Yeah, they just
so you were making
away.
No money. Mm-hmm. Just so this guy could can ride around with his Harley friends from wherever they were riding from, the Sturgis.
Yeah, they would go from, you're talking about Bischoff and his friends,
right,
would go from like Minneapolis. They'd
right.
fly their bikes to Minneapolis,
right,
and then ride them to, I think it's Rapid City, South Dakota, wherever the hell
right.
it is, Sturgis. Yeah.
And I must have complained about that because I guarantee I was on every single fucking one they had. I hated that place. Not the people. People were cool.
Yeah,
just
yeah,
that place.
Just the concept of it.
You know, it was hard, right?
Yeah,
remember?
And the thing is, too, you know, at the time, we were drawing big, big, big numbers. So
yeah.
you're throwing away a $500,000 to $750,000 house just to be able to do this
right.
in the parking lot at Sturgis, just so you could ride your motorcycles there. So from a business standpoint, even,
it was
just
ludicrous.
Stupid. Yeah,
right,
just stupid.
Right. Not to mention that, like, all the boys hated it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was terrible.
Was there anybody besides the motorcycle crew that you remember going to Sturgis?
No, because like you said, it was so hard to even get in and out of there.
Yeah.
And then you're wrestling in front of a non-responsive crowd,
right,
whose only reactions they would give you is just by revving their engines.
Right.
So, I mean, that's
super inebriated. And,
but you had kind of – you worked your way up the ladder fairly well. It's funny because I had Raven on the show a month ago, whatever it was.
Okay, please.
Our
like
favorite.
One thing. We need to have a show with Raven.
That's what I mean. You, me, and Raven have to get a show together.
What was the name that you had?
The Useless Trivia Triumvirate, Triumvirate or something like that. Yeah.
Okay, let me say something that I thought was hilarious and is so Chris Jericho. Let me set this up. So Raven comes up with this ludicrous word.
Right.
And Jericho didn't believe it. So he went and he looked for it in a dictionary and came back like two or three days later and called them out on it. And you were right. Let me tell you why.
Okay.
I don't like this show. I don't even like it now, but I watched it just so I'd have something to talk with you about, which might be less than 5 minutes, but I watched Tough Enough.
Okay.
And some guy used the word sarcophagus.
Sarcophagus.
Right.
Yeah.
And you go, first of all, do you know what it means? And the guy said it. You go, can you spell it? Which he couldn't. And I thought to myself, you don't want to bring up any big words around Jericho because he will call you out a la Raven. Am I right or not?
You're totally right. And yeah. Even better, you can tell this was the mid-90s because I had to go look in a dictionary. Right. Now you just get your phone
not
out
the
and
internet,
just Google
right,
it, right?
Right. Yeah. That's why it took 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. First I had to find a dictionary.
Right. Now you would have sizzled them on spot.
But we had a good little group of guys that would hang out and just sit around. Because, like I said, you and Raven, what my point was, is that you guys did – fairly good, and of course we had our glass ceilings, but you guys were a little bit higher than that. Like, you, best example, you got into the NWO,
right?
And my favorite thing is, where did you always stand at every NWO interview?
Yeah, me?
Yeah.
Right behind whoever had the mic.
Right behind Hogan or Bischoff. Right. You would always be in the shot. There'd be 12 guys in the damn ring, and then you go to the close-up, and you'd always see Conan standing right there.
I knew you were
going to
be on this. So now that I was with him in the back, I was like, I'm going to get my FaceTime one way or another, whether you want to give it to me or not. But let me just say something about Raven, which I thought was hilarious, too. So we're on the Donnie and Marie show, right? Mm. And
you and Raven?
Yes, me and Raven. What is
Why would they send
right.
You guys
just two Donnie. Random guys, right? And so they go, yeah, Raven, I hear that you have an IQ of 145. And he goes, it's 155. And then he goes, I hear that you read books, you know, every week. You know, he goes, yeah, I read 8 to 10 books cover to cover. You know, he had fed them these questions so they would ask him, and he still gave him a low IQ so he could say a higher one. How over is Raven? And he forgot to mention that the 8 to 10 books were comic books, but that's another thing.
They're graphic novels.
Yeah. And the other one, the other Raven story, I got to give you one
Please.
More. Well, I'll give you two more.
Yeah.
And the other Raven story is one time in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Raven wasn't afraid to go after the trollest of the...
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this elevator opens up, and it's like 3 in the morning. You know he's trying to sneak this girl out without anybody seeing her. And the door opened, and he looked at me like, bro, I'd rather see anybody at this moment, including the devil, than this motherfucker, because I know he's going to tell. This girl was so ugly, Hello Kitty said goodbye. I mean, she was brutal.
You've been waiting.
And
for a
I
month
told,
to use that joke.
And I knocked on Kevin Nash's door. And I go, bro, you've got to see this. You've got to see. Because he was outside. I don't know if he was looking for his car or they were waiting for a taxi. She was outside sitting, standing, you know, in the parking lot.
Yeah.
He was bad.
He
was rolled mercilessly for a couple of months.
We were talking about the time he tried to pick up, actually an 80-year-old lady tried to pick up him wearing Jordache jeans, and she had a motorcycle, and he didn't sleep with her, but he regrets it to this day.
Oh, that's tremendous.
She would have, yeah.
Okay, I don't understand, and I know you've seen this, because if I have, you have. I don't know how many times I walked with him into a club, and he didn't need his flock to be Raven.
Yeah.
He was like with me in disco. And he's on the dance floor dancing and coming close to any girl that's like inebriated or alone. I'm thinking, wow, there's cameras, there's security,
right.
There's other people here. How does he get away with this? Just tremendous.
It was the 90s.
Yeah.
Things were different then.
Yes.
How did you like being in the NWO? Did you get anything out of that, or was it just kind of
NWO?
Spinning
I got nothing because, you know, I was on that on the first one, the black and white. I was on like that NWO C team.
Who
like,
was in that?
Virgil, Horace Boulder.
Right.
So I was real good at ring sachets, you know, and shit, you know, like I could really move to the ring. I was real good at run-ins. Then what really happened is Hogan and Nash got into a fight as a shoot and Eric. So at that time, he was hanging around a lot with Luger, Nash was. So he said, why don't we just start the red and black, and it'll be me, Hall, Luger. So when they had that team, then they brought me in, and then they brought Sting in.
I know. Right.
Right. And Macho, how wild was that? Huh. What a wild group, you know?
They're random, too.
Yeah. And I was like the lowest guy on the totem pole, but I got a super rub. Because that's like when all my catchphrases were getting over and they were giving me the mic.
And you had some great ones too.
Yeah.
Ole, ole, let me speak on this. What else did you have?
Bowdy.
Bowdy.
Yeah, rowdy. What's that?
Where did you get that one from?
From Master P. He was a rapper that was like, I'm bowdy and rowdy, yeah. And so I would always, but to me the funniest thing is like when we would go especially to like the South or the Midwest, where it was mostly Anglo audience, and they would always repeat what I would say. I'm like, when they're into you, bro, they're into you. Yeah. It's like when I look at WWE right now, it's so funny to me. Because let me tell you, do you watch the show most weeks or every week?
Most weeks.
Okay. And so the most over things on the show are What's Up?
Yeah.
Feed Me More. Mm-hmm. Finish It. The RKO. Bray Wyatt's entrance. Have I said a wrestler yet? And Brock Lesnar and Paulie. This is like the only thing that's over on the show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, like you said, people like to be involved.
Yeah.
And that's one
more
thing.
More than ever, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, whenever it was, and that's why you talk about your character, Ole, you know, let me speak on this, people knew what to say, and they yeah, like being involved.
Or even with you, when you would say, again.
Yeah, never,
bro,
ever.
I
yeah.
loved, who came up with this? I super popped, and I remember where I was when I said I was in West Virginia. When you debuted on Raw,
mm-hmm.
and they had the ding, ding, ding,
the countdown, ding, yeah.
Who came up with that?
That was my idea.
That
the
was
countdown,
awesome.
Yeah.
Where'd the music come from? Because the music was
the music
awesome.
Was not. That was probably production. You know,
that
Kevin
was awesome.
Dunn,
that
maybe.
Music was perfect.
It was perfect for that. Yeah, I saw that in a post office. I went to deliver some mail late 1999, and they had a countdown to the new millennium.
That's awesome.
15 weeks. Yeah. 7 days, 8 hours, whatever. And I was like, that'd be perfect. That's it.
Yeah.
And then Vince had the idea to have the countdown end in the middle of Rock's promo.
Plus, your name was Y2J.
That was going to be the name of my finish. Oh. But then Vince goes, no, that's not the name of your finish. That's you. You're Y2J.
That was cool.
You know? So that worked, you know. But you had a short stint in WWE in the, was it late 80s? Early 90s?
Yeah, 89, 90, I would say.
And that was with as Max Moon,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, Max Moon. That was just an idea I had seen when I wrestled in Japan. It was this robot that I had seen on TV that shot like fire and smoke and all this. So I told Vince when I met him. And just to show you, bro, when I met him, Percy Pringle,
Percy Pringle was Paul Bearer.
Undertaker, right.
Yeah, Undertaker's guy.
We both got the job the same day. And he was so happy because it was around like in December. And I went and I saw Vince, and bro, he didn't even ask me anything about the Latino demographic, which if Conan were to come in now, you know, younger, he'd be all over me on that. Nothing was spoken about the Latino demographic at all. And so we just talked about the robot, you know, and he liked it. And then he was like, all right, well, send me the designs and we'll see what we can do. And I was like, I want to get as wild as I can with it. So basically, it was going to shoot confetti. It was going to shoot smoke. And I also wanted to shoot fire. And then Vince came up with the idea, which I thought was tremendous, of putting a jetpack on me. But he said he couldn't do it indoors and fly me from the stage to the ring. Mm. And he would bring me into all the TV taping. He would have me walk like a robot and all this. He took a lot of time with me. And, bro, that got a lot of jealousy from a lot of guys. And I later found out, at least he had the balls to tell me, Scott Hall and Shawn Michaels, they had been burying me because I got there one day. Because basically what happened was is I had to fly from Mexico to L.A., pick up the boxes because that's where it was being constructed and all that. And then wherever I went, I think that time we were in Cape Cod. So I would fly into Boston, have to get a taxi, usually two, to put all these boxes in, bring it all the way over there, you know. And so I got out of the car, you know, Arnold Skoland.
Mm-hmm.
So Arnold Skoland was there, and I was like, yo, who's going to pay for this? And they're like, can you believe this guy's talking like that to Arnie? He's a sergeant, all this bullshit. Yeah. And they were just burying me, and which didn't really matter because I had already, like about 3 months after that, I just didn't show up to tapings anymore because I started to do the soap opera and I was blowing up so hard. I was
in
like,
Mexico,
yeah, I was
soap
like, WWE.
Right.
You know, that wasn't like, because the thing is, Chris, I didn't grow up wanting to be a wrestler, even watching that much wrestling. I mean, my whole wrestling thing was like when I was maybe 6 years old till I was 9 or 10, I used to watch Florida Championship Wrestling.
Because you're a Miami guy, right?
I'm a Miami guy. So little did I know now how great that wrestling was, because I grew up with Dusty Rhodes. Like, that was everybody.
In the heyday, yeah.
Yeah, Dusty, when he had all that charisma. And I remember I actually went one day to the Miami Beach Convention Center, and I saw Dusty against superstar Billy Graham. Nice. Anyway, so I had Dusty, the Briscoes against the Funks, and Kevin Sullivan was there, Mike Graham was there, and there was a lot of good wrestling.
Yeah.
And Gordon Solie, who's an incredible announcer. If you've never heard him, bro, this guy's on another level. And so I grew up watching that. And then that was on Channel 6 in Miami. Then on Channel 23, that was a Spanish station. It was actually like on the, remember back then when they had the top knob and the bottom knob, and the bottom knob was all the UHF lower. UHF. That's where the Spanish one was. It was channel 23 on the bottom knob. Like that was like the low class shit. So channel 23 was showing wrestling from the Olympic Auditorium in LA. And I was like, holy shit, this is in Spanish and it's different. It's cool. And it's Latino. It's Mexicans. I'm not sure what that is, but they're speaking Spanish, you know? And so I was watching that and that was really cool too. You know, that was like Gorman and Goliath, the Mil Máscaras and Freddie Blassie. And, you know, so I was getting that taste of both. Looking back, that was great wrestling. And then I just fell out of it. You know, I just fucking.
Yeah, you grew up and got into something else.
Then I remember my uncle in Florida. He was like a bouncer. He held all these records of like for deadlift and powerlifting. So he was big, but like fat guy, like kind of like remember that Russian Alexiev?
Yeah.
A weightlifter like that, Smirnoff, big, but whatever. You know he had his gut. And he had wrestled in Florida with a hood. He never told me his name, so I'm assuming he was a jobber. And so he wrestled in a hood, and he was always saying, "Yeah, Ox Baker broke my leg," and. You know, I got to see him and ask him if that really actually happened or he was just working me. But, you know, I would always ask him, is wrestling real? And he goes, yeah, it's real. You know, Ox Baker just broke my leg. And I was like, fuck. And so he's actually on a show on TV called It's Brutal, too, but somehow they're still on the air. It's on True TV. It's
your
like
uncle?
It's like a towing company.
South
Beach Tow.
Right.
That's my uncle and that's my cousins, all those people. That's my stepfather's side. And so anyways, he was a badass, bro, believe me. I don't want to get him in trouble on the podcast, but he was a badass. And so he was one day I went to his house and he was watching Georgia Championship Wrestling. Now, I hadn't seen wrestling in a long time, so by this time I'm 17 and I was like, holy shit, there's Dusty again, you know, and there's Flair, who, and there's this guy and there's that guy. And I kind of got into it a little bit, fell out of it again, and then I started watching it around maybe 87 for some reason. I'm not sure why, probably because WWE was really popular back then.
Super hot, yeah.
Yeah, I just started to watch, and they had a lot of great people on, you know, and I remember specifically going to the, I still have my ticket, I went to the this thing in San Diego, where do they have the shows in San Diego?
Sports Arena?
Sports Arena, yeah. And I was at the Sports Arena, and Paul Orndorff was on there. I actually have pictures of them. Mil Máscaras, Bob Backlund. And then and that might have been maybe 2 years before that, but the one show I do remember going that I was like, holy shit, this is just awesome, was the Strike Force, Tito Santana and
Rick Martel.
They were awesome.
Yeah, great team, yeah.
I was always a big fan of Rick Martel. Remember when he used to team with Tony Garea?
Yeah. Well, he was even in WCW for a short time.
I saw him. Yeah. I was marking out. Yeah. I was a big fan of his. He was always in good shape, too. And great wrestler, right?
He was a big star in Winnipeg, too, where I grew up. He was AWA champion. Yeah, great wrestler.
Yeah, absolutely. Great wrestler, absolutely. Great look, right?
Yeah.
And they were wrestling... what was the Tongan trio called? Haku and Tonga Kid?
The Islanders.
Yeah. Bro, what a match. And just, and then Macho came out. Like, I was a big...
So you still remember this?
Yes, I remember this. And so what I remember also, because I really didn't follow that much wrestling, go to that much wrestling matches, but what's always been funny to me is how much, and maybe because I was older when Hogan was big, but how much American kids and even Canadian guys look up to Hogan. Because when I saw Hogan, I thought he was Super JoJo. I thought, to me, the man here is Macho Man. I thought that was the coolest motherfucker I'd ever seen. And I thought it was hilarious because I remember this one scene where, like, Elizabeth was afraid to go down, like, a aquatic slide, like in a water park, and he pushed her. I thought that was awesome.
That was the early days of Saturday Night's Main Event when they would do those skits
DiBiase
like that.
DiBiase would come to the swimming pool and kick all the kids out. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
How awesome was that?
He would dribble the ball. If you could dribble the ball 10 times. You know who did that once? Van Damme.
Really?
Van Damme was a kid who they like just happened to get pulled out of the audience as like a, you know, 12-year-old kid and dribbled the ball 8 times and then DiBiase kicked it and he had to leave.
That's awesome. But how great was that, right?
It is great stuff.
That's great heat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was watching around then because it was entertaining. It was good, you know? And so I don't even know why we are here.
How did you end up in Mexico?
Oh, how I ended up in Mexico. You'll love this one. So this guy invites me to a wrestling match in Mexico City. And he's putting over how great Mexican wrestling is. And he opens up his trunk. Now, this guy's got like a limp. So he opens up his trunk and he shows me a championship belt. And I'd never seen one. So I marked out. I was like, holy shit, you're the world champion? And I must have been maybe 22 at this time.
Had you wrestled at all?
Never.
Okay.
And wasn't thinking about it either.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and like, yeah, I'm the world champion. I go, why do you have a limp? He goes, oh, because in the dressing room, I got into a fight and they broke my leg. And I'm recuperating. But when I get back, I'm going to kick some ass. So I was like, all right. So then we went to the, so he took me to a show. He goes, hey, you want to go to a wrestling? Wrestling, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
And he was like, nah, well, you like boxing. He knew I was a boxer. You like boxing? You like Salvador Sanchez, Julio Cesar Chavez? Yeah, come watch the rest of it, just as good. All right, boom. We went down there. The first day I went, one of the first persons that I remember seeing was Kato Kung Lee. Remember mm-hmm. him?
Yeah.
Negro Casas, which we've talked about. And I was just mesmerized, bro.
Kato Kung Lee, now, oh, is it Kung Fu that looked like a real rummy?
Yeah,
like he really looked like. Okay, so, but Kato was more
of
like
a Panamanian guy. Yeah,
yeah, he was, but he was more like in shape and very limber.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
right. Gotcha.
He was Kato the one that walked the ropes.
Yes, yeah, he could walk the top.
You know who was awesome when he first went to Mexico, and I know you saw him. Do you remember early Acai?
Oh yeah.
How incredibly! Oh, I remember he came. I don't know if you remember. He came with two other guys. I don't know if you remember.
I don't remember that.
Okay, well then they had already left. He came with two other guys, bro. They were. Incredible. I saw them too. And so first of all, I go in there. The place is super rabid, unlike American crowds. Very rabid. They're really into it. A lot more blood, a lot of hot bitches.
Is this in Mexico?
This is in Tijuana.
Okay, gotcha.
It's right here, we're in San Diego. Yeah, folks. Gotcha. Where I reside. And so Tijuana is like 10-15 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in there and I was just fucking mesmerized. And at that time, I was a big bodybuilder.
Yeah.
So we walk into the dressing room and this guy, his name is John Roberts. He tells the promoter, he goes, hey, yeah, I'm, you know, that big guy over there, he's wrestled before and he'd like to wrestle. Because he had asked me during the match, would you be interested in doing something like that? I go, looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so he tells the promoter, oh, yeah, where have you wrestled? And I'm like, fuck. And he goes, he's wrestled in Florida. And he goes, who have you wrestled? I'm like, well, I started in Florida names, Bugsy McGraw, yeah. Eddie Graham, you know. And he's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, he goes, I worked Eddie Graham.
Right. So he goes, I didn't want to make the guy look bad, you know.
Right.
So so he goes, he says, all right, so you're booked next week. I was like, what? So I'm telling this guy, bro, what am I going to do? He goes, just go in there, knock him out. I go, what do you mean, just go in there, knock him out? He goes, yeah, just knock him out. I go, how come I've never seen anybody else do that? He goes, that's what's going to make you different. So many wrestlers have been in the wrestling business this long, and they've never thought of that. I'm the first guy, you know.
Right.
And so, but let me tell you the what gave me why I was scared. I was afraid that they would throw me to the ropes, and I would go through them and fall outside.
Oh.
So I kept telling him, teach me how to hit the ropes, or however I said it back then.
Yeah.
Teach me how to hit the ropes. Because I'm not going to go through. He goes, how are you going to go through him if you're going to knock the guy out? I go, what if he attacks me first? Like, I was really afraid of being embarrassed.
Yeah.
So the day comes. I don't remember that week what happened. But I get there, and I'm in the first match, and they have me as the Incredible Hulk.
That's your name?
Yeah. And I got this guy's gear, which is like some fucking black trunks and black boots.
Yeah.
Which I hardly fit in.
Yeah.
I'm like, bro, the Incredible Hulk, I should have been painted green or something green, don't you think? He goes, that, bro, make a name for yourself. Like, he was really pumping me up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, unless you teach me how to hit the ropes, I'm not going in. Okay. So finally, we go to train, and Rey Mysterio Sr., who you know is there.
Yeah.
And he was a world champion at that time. So he's putting oil on his shit, and he goes, so you're the guy that wrestled in Florida? Like, he could tell I was lying.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Just like we could tell if someone was making it up today. Yeah.
Right. And I was like, I'm busted. I go, no, I've never wrestled there. He goes, and why are you telling people you have? And I go, because my manager, he goes, wait a minute. You've never had a match and you have a manager? I was like, yeah.
It's show business, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So he goes, who's your manager? And I go, the world champion, John Roberts. He's sitting right over there. And he goes, that's a fan. Can you believe a fan tricked me into becoming a wrestler? You didn't know that, did you?
I never did. I've never heard that story before. You never told me that.
Yeah.
Yeah, 22 yeah. years of knowing yeah. you. I never knew that before. So did Ray Sr. then say, look, well, you're here now. Come on. Or
right, right. Okay. And then he just commenced to beating my ass for like 2 weeks. I had right. concussions. He fractured my fucking wrist. I mean, and I actually went with two other guys. I had just gotten out of the service. So I went with two other guys. And they're like, this shit, you know.
They left. Yeah.
But I liked it. You know, I liked it. And
what was it, do you think, that you had, I mean, that made you such a big star in such a short time? Like, connection with the audience, but what was it that made you different to stand out? Body?
I think it was a combination of the body, because back then nobody was that size.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's definitely, you know, as presumptuous as this might sound now, but believe me, this is now me later, you know, charisma.
Yeah, well, no, you can say it, yeah.
And I was wearing a lot of cool outfits that nobody had ever
right.
worn. If you remember, I invested a lot of money in my outfits. So while back then I was wearing like white and gray and black and shit like that, I was breaking out the Miami colors, pastels. Mm-hmm. You see me dress. Mm-hmm. So I had
even the hair that you had.
Yeah,
the long braids
with colors in them.
Yeah.
Nobody had that, bro. So it was a different look, just a different vibe, a new guy on the scene, just somebody. And you know, one thing, bro, always, one thing that I always thought, and I think this helped me a lot, is especially with fans. I always felt that a fan, if they, like the kid tells the mom, hey, I want to go to a wrestling show. Oh, if you behave good or you get good grades or whatever the case may be, I'm going to bring you. The kid's behaving good all week, telling his friends, and then he gets there, whether it's a cab, subway, walking, taxi, in his car. He waits the whole show, and then you just dip. Bro, I hate that. And I've seen so many fans get really pissed off. I know me. When I was in Miami, I used to work at the Orange Bowl. And afterwards, I would wait for the players and get their autographs and shit. And there were players that I loved. And once they dissed me, I hated them. And so I always thought that. I said, you know, if I ever become big, I'm not going to have a kid hate me because I didn't sign his autographs. So even to this day, it doesn't matter how many people are there, unless I really have to be somewhere really quick and say, I'm sorry, I normally don't do this. Mm-hmm. I got to go. But I will take my time to sign, because, bro, it's just admiration.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we overlook that, you know.
You know, it's Ronnie James Dio told me this one time. He said, because he would always do the same thing, Dio, singer of Black Sabbath, and very since passed away, but he would sign for everybody outside. Ronnie, why do you do that? And he's like, you always, he said, don't deny somebody their moment. He said, give them their moment. He said, you'll never remember it, but they'll never forget it.
And don't they'll tell everybody.
That's right.
Good or bad, yes. They'll tell everybody. How many
around.
Times have you met somebody, right,
mm-hmm.
that met somebody you like, and you ask him, how was he? Was he cool or was he a dick?
That's true, yeah.
And when they tell you he's a dick, you're like, fuck.
Yeah, I didn't want to hear that.
Right.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the guys that you mentioned that you brought in, and a guy that I don't think it's...
Hey, I would like to say that, how many minutes are we into this podcast?
I don't even know. We are 48 minutes
We're
in.
We're 40 minutes into this. For people that listen to my podcast, I am on Iranian tobacco. I do have cotton mouth. This man has not offered me
I've
a drink.
You've got a whole thing of water right there. I've been pouring it in a glass.
Oh, so
you
I
can
drink
have
from
it.
A bottle and you drink from a cup.
Well,
once
you start drinking it, that's yours. No, that's you. No, that's your. You can have it. That's for you. Right. That's why I had it there.
Did I shame you into giving me the rest of your water? Let me give you.
Okay, top it up, and then you got a whole thing of water there. I'm a very good podcast host. I brought that just for you. I brought that for you.
I cannot believe that.
It's a whole big 1 liter bottle of Evian, and it's right there. It's been there the whole show on the table, and you tried to call me out, and I deftly swerved you back.
There. All right.
Okay. So let's talk a little. And it's funny to talk like this because, you know, we have known each other for such a long time, and there's only a few people that really know the genius / lunacy of Art Barr.
Right.
And, you know, I don't think a lot of people really get a chance to talk about him because there's not a lot of people that remember him, I don't think, at this point in time. Most of them have passed away. But you said you found Love Machine, Art Barr, Love Machine. Where did you find him? And he's another guy that got huge in Mexico.
Well, I was in WCW and I had been invited to the Pat O'Connor Memorial Cup, which was like a tournament of tag teams.
That's right, yeah.
And I went there representing Mexico, and out of like allegiance to Rey Mysterio Sr., who gave me my first break, I brought him in with me. Mm. And then we wrestled that night.
Which was like Michael Hayes or something? Or
who?
He's wrestled Michael Hayes of Freebirds or something?
No, but I can tell you Michael Hayes story in a minute when I first got there. So we got there and we wrestled Norman Smiley and Chris Adams.
Okay.
Who was representing
Team England.
England.
Yeah.
Adams, God bless his soul, he was a super pain in the ass to work with because he was like the only one known out of the three.
Oh.
He let us know it the whole in the dressing room.
Right.
I was like, really, dude? And then we fought the Steiners, who went on to the finals to fight the Russians. They had like two shoot Russian Olympic champions. Remember that they were wrestling with with Onita back then? Not Onita, Inoki.
Remember he had brought in UWF like, or something like that, yeah.
He had brought in shoot, like mm-hmm. Soviet.
They were wearing like geese, I think.
Yeah, medalists from the, so yeah. Finding Scott Steiner was a chore in itself. and then once he got in there, you know, he didn't want to do nothing. So my first impression of American was like a bunch of divas, you know.
Yeah.
And but I met Norman Smiley, who was a super cool guy, nice guy, and I told him, I'm going to get you over to Mexico. Oh, everybody has promised me shit, and they don't. I go, I will get you there. When they put me on the road, and I was wrestling for a while Bobby Eaton, who was very gracious, and check this out. When I first got there, they put me on the road with him so he would teach me, and he was jobbing to me like on the house shows, on the road, never complained, never showed any signs of. So fast forward 15 years later, and we're in his hometown. I don't know where it is, Alabama or something. We're in his hometown, and Arn Anderson comes up to me and he goes, yo, this is Bob Eaton's hometown. He goes, would you put him over? And I said, sure. Mm-hmm. And I did.
Yeah.
That was awesome for me. You know?
Yeah. Repay the favor.
Yeah, because by that time, he really wasn't anybody in the business anymore. But it was like, bro, you did it for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's some of the nicest things you can do, right, in the business.
Absolutely, especially for a guy like Bobby, because he legitimately is a good guy.
Yeah.
He always had a bag, and inside that bag would be supplies. If you need a toothbrush, Bobby's got an extra one. You need a pair of socks, he's got an extra one. You need gum, candy, you know.
And a nice guy.
Yeah.
But my point was, at any time you can pay back somebody that helped you early
on in your
career, it's always...
That's right. I did the same thing for Magic. He helped me in Monterey. My first championship match was against Black Magic, who was the CMLL heavyweight champion. I was a nobody. I was just working for Elizondo. I lost the match, but two out of three falls, and it was like the best match I'd have, and it put me on the map.
Right.
Fast forward 15 years later, training center needs a trainer. Magic needs a job. I talked to a few people. Norman's been working for WWE for 8 years now, I think. Yeah.
That's great.
You know, you can't forget that.
Yeah, yeah. No, and
because he didn't have to do that, you know, like you said.
Right, so. He's a cool, yeah.
Right.
And so...
you're at the tag team tournament.
At the tag team tournament, right, and I saw Magic, and then I was on the road with Bobby Eaton, and then Art Barr was doing a gimmick called Little Juicer, which Roddy Piper gave to him from the movie Beetlejuice. So he would actually go around the ring with little kids following him. But at the same time, he had something in Oregon, where he's from, where he had sex with like an underage girl.
Oh, right.
But he was like maybe 18 and the chick was 15. It wasn't like he was 40 and she was five. But either way,
the charge,
against
the
law.
Is statutory rape.
Something like
on
that.
Those lines.
Right.
Yeah.
So they were like, yeah, how is it possible that you have a guy like, and he was super over with the crowd. And how, you know, and they were bombarding him. How can you have a rapist and all this bullshit?
Yeah, as an idol for kids.
Right.
Right.
And so they were like, he goes, man, I'm pretty sure they're going to fire me. He goes, you know what? I think I could bring you to Mexico. Are you willing to come down? He goes, yeah. So I brought Magic and I brought Love Machine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Both of them became very big stars.
Very big stars.
But.
Because you can see, because like you say, you can see talent, Jericho.
Yeah,
I remember when I first came to TNA, I went to the very first show. It was like in Alabama. There was nobody there either. And there were like a bunch of guys I'd never heard of in my life. And I went for one show, and they never called me back. And the months passed. And I remember that people would go, oh, you're going back to TNA? What happened? I would always say, they'll call me back. They'll call me back. And then I saw Jeff in Europe, and we were with McManus. I don't think you ever heard of him. He was this guy that was doing, like, tours in Ireland.
Yeah, Andrew McManus.
Yeah, Andrew McManus. So I met him there, and he goes, hey, you know, would you like to come back? I go, yeah, but he goes, you have any ideas? And then I told him, yeah, I want to come back and doing this. You have the X Division. To me, that's a ripoff of Lucha Libre. I go, let me go off on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, bro, I went in there and I stayed there for like 6 years. Because
at
the end of the day, like you said, I knew deep down inside, whether it's presumptuousness,
assuredness,
right? Not a bad word. Whatever it is, you know, you're just sure of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew, I go back there and I know I'm going to do, you know what I'm saying?
So, right. You knew that you had the talent,
right?
Much like
so,
you said.
So when I saw Magic, when I saw Ray, when I saw Psychosis, when I saw Love Machine, when I saw any of these guys that I've helped, it was like, it's there. It just needs to be harvested. It needs to be polished. It needs to be helped. It needs to be pushed, but it's there.
All right, we're talking to Conan, and I want to ask you, how much did you help Love Machine, Art Barr? Because when he came in first as a babyface, he was doing all right, but then when he turned heel, he went through the roof.
Right, he was great. Well, because he was kind of a heel in real life.
Yeah.
I was like, Art, you know, you need to think about changing. I go, and he loved it, you know, and he did, you know. And so, you know, and he was, the great thing about Art, too bad people didn't get to see him, because Art was good on the mic, great on the mic, very charismatic, could wrestle, could do lucha. There isn't nothing he could do except maybe speak good Spanish.
Yeah.
But other than that, he just had it all.
For a guy that would have been able to transfer into, you know, WCW or WWE, he had it all.
Right. And him and I think you came in after, but did you come in after Eddie and Dean? ECW?
Right after, yeah.
Right after, right.
But I was in Mexico with Eddie and Art, though.
Right, but right. He knew about that. That's how,
gotcha,
that's how on point Paulie was, bro. So this is like maybe 1995 or something like that, and we're in Singapore at some indie show, right? John Arezzi, I don't know if you knew him.
Yeah.
He had put it together. And so he was telling me, yo, I'm going to have this new show. I'm going to have Maddie the DJ, some guy that was hot in New York at that time. He's going to be DJing. I was like, wow, that's cool. And I'm going to have Hugh Morris as the man with no name come up the top rope and do a 360,
moonsault,
and then leave. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have Public Enemy. He goes, I got a question, man. How's this Eddie Guerrero and Love Machine and Rey Mysterio and Psychosis? And, you know, he knew everybody in Mexico, you, everybody. I'm like, bro, these guys are and awesome, you know. And then he was like, okay, who would you send first? I go, well, I think Ray and Psychosis. And who do I put him with? And I go, each other. I go, just let me tell you something, with all due respect to the rest of your roster, they're going to steal the show. Because that's what I want. You know, and you know Paulie's not good at calling back, at least not me.
Not anybody.
And that motherfucker called me back like he was still in the arena. Hey, when can I kind of have him back again?
Yeah. You know? That was Oscar's thing. I remember the same thing happened in Japan the first time he showed up, working with Psychosis as a special attraction at the second J Cup. And I remember me and Benoit watching the match, and I'd never seen Ray. And to give him his credit, Psychosis as well. I see them in magazines, and you look at they remember in Japan they'd have picture by picture.
Yeah,
of the move.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And sometimes not being able to figure out exactly what he's doing, because we'd never seen anything like that before.
Right.
And watching him live was like Jackie Chan, like a real life superhero. But so small, especially at the time that when he first came in, the Japanese boss was mad at Asai for bringing him in. He's too small. It's an embarrassment. After the show, same thing. When can I get him back? Because Ray was really small, especially then. He wasn't even super muscled either.
Yeah.
Did you have to take a chance on him? I mean, how did you convince people to give him a shot?
No, the thing with Ray was when I first saw him, my immediate thought was, the first thing I thought was like, wow, what a sympathetic baby face. He's the smallest guy on the card. Can you imagine if I put him against a giant, how much sympathy he would get? So that was really how I, and it was funny because I would go to bars in Hollywood, you know, when I was still in the indie scene, and, you know, you had to be like 18 to get in. You know, and I would bring Ray in with a mask. They're like, how old is this guy? And I go, no, he's a midget. You know, he's very sensitive too. Don't bring it up, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can't have anybody in here that's underage. And bro, and I go, just watch his match. And bro, they would go, like the same guys that didn't want to bring him in and ask him for his autograph, not knowing who he was. He was so incredibly awesome, you know, and Psychosis too. So, and I brought him to Mexico, and I told Tonio about him. He wanted to put him with the minis, the little guys, small people. Is that the word? No,
the little people.
Yeah, little people. And but when they saw Ray and what he could do, they were all of them. They were kind of like veterans in the game already, and I could already tell by what they were telling me they were going to beat his ass. And I was like, bro, if you put him with the minis, they're just going to beat him up. I go, just put him with the normal guys and you'll see. And so he went in there. You know, his punches looked really, really bad. And Peña was like, tell Ray that if he doesn't learn how to punch, I can't use him. I can't put him in any feuds. You know, so I had to teach him how to hit a wall and punch. And I go, if it hurts, then you're doing it wrong, you know. And he learned how to punch. And then he just blew
up.
And
you've always kind of had, you've had a great relationship even up to this day. Like you said, you walked in talking to him. But it seems like everywhere you went, you always took him with you.
Right.
Right?
Right. The only place, yeah, was WWE. Because when I went to AAA, I brought him. When I went to ECW, I recommended him. I recommended him in WCW. I recommend Puerto Rico. But when he went to WWE, you know, I had so much heat from being such a pain in the ass. Mm. And I remember you one time actually called me because I had called Bruce the Stooge,
Pritchard.
Jackass Pritchard. And I had said, yo, this is Conan. Who? Hey, motherfucker. When I was Max Moon and you were Brother Love, we were talking. We were chopping it up. It ain't like you don't know who the fuck I am. Mm-hmm. He goes, who? And I go, Conan, you know. He goes, send me a tape.
Wow.
And then you called me back. Do you remember what you told me?
No.
And you go, bro, Bruce Pritchard thinks it's very presumptuous of you to call him and say you're Conan. Okay, so should I say I'm Carlos Espada or Charles Ashenoff? Because I know he don't know those motherfuckers.
That's
what a dickhead.
Yeah, I never really understood that because there was you, Mysterio as well. They didn't want Mysterio in the WWE either. And Vampiro, I don't think they wanted, but Vampiro didn't have anybody supporting, but you and Ray did. But Ray finally squeaked in, but they never gave you a shot.
Yeah, and I remember I asked Eddie once because Eddie wanted to bring me in.
Yeah.
And he was like, he said, let me ask Hunter. And then Hunter went, he must have talked to Vince, and then he came back to Eddie, and he goes, Vince goes, Eddie told me, he goes, you have heat with Vince? And well, I might have heat over the Max Moon thing because I just didn't show up to TV, but it's a long time ago. And then I saw Stephanie. You know, and then I just, she was like, yeah, what's up, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I just told her, I go, I think I have heat with your dad. She goes, over what? And I go, over the Max Moon thing. She goes, that's a long time ago. And I go, that's what I thought. But every time I went there, Pritchard always treated me like
that. You mentioned Eddie, and that's another guy that I would assume you probably helped out because he was also kind of a nondescript. Well, he was nondescript. He was a babyface. Everyone liked Eddie Guerrero. Once again, though, when he turned heel in Mexico with Art Barr and became Los Gringos Locos, shot him through the roof. Did you have any influence in him turning heel?
Well, the thing is that when I met Art, he was like one of my best friends, and Eddie was one of my best friends. I was like, man, these two guys are going to get along, but they hated each other at the beginning. And then after that, you know, they were inseparable. Please tell me that story of when you first met Eddie and you told him your name.
Yeah, I first met Eddie through Hector.
Yeah.
Hector's probably a very sweet guy. And Eddie at the time, when Eddie drank, Eddie the Giant,
right.
We all know, and he was an asshole.
Right.
I had never met Eddie before, just heard about him, read about him in magazines, whatever. Hector takes me to this room. Eddie's in there in his underwear, totally drunk. And Hector's like, hey, this is my friend. He's here. He goes, what's your name? I said,
I think you said your wrestling name.
Yeah. Well, because he said, he goes, he's a wrestler.
Yeah.
He's here wrestling. He goes, what's your name? So I assumed he's asking my wrestler. I said, Corazon de Leon. It's Lionheart. He goes, first of all, I speak Spanish, you f***ing idiot. I know what Corazon de Leon is. Second of all, I didn't ask for your wrestling name. I asked for your real name, you Mark. And I'm like, I'm sorry. And I'm like, all I heard was how great this guy is, and he's the biggest dick I've ever met. And about 3 seconds later, he was passed out on the bed.
Your book, you also buried me saying I was a dick. You said that when you first met me and Art Barr brushed you off.
Let me finish the story with Eddie.
Yeah.
Next morning, I'm eating breakfast in the Los Plaza Madrid.
You mean Plaza Madrid?
The Plaza Madrid.
Yeah.
And Eddie comes up to me and goes, I want to say I'm sorry. I said, for what? He goes, I'm not sure. He said, all I know is I remember that I met you last night. I'm probably assuming that I wasn't very nice to you, so I'm sorry for whatever I did. And I was like,
that was nice, Eddie.
And that's how we became friends. Yeah. Nice, Eddie. I was with, you remember Mike Lazansky?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so Mike was the guy who brought me.
I would love for you to one day have the balls, the post on your Twitter thing, page, post, whatever it is, what you looked like when you came into Mexico with Mike Lazansky.
I looked good, man. I was looking rocking. Rocking, man.
Bro, you look like a bathhouse honey.
Okay. I got a great picture of you and me at a Christmas party in Mexico City in about 93.
Probably wearing
I look like I'm in Poison, and you look like you're freaking Mambo number 5. You get this Big Cuban giant, like, flat hat. You got the Johnny Depp pirate headband on with the braids in the back. These big hoop earrings. I don't know which one of us looks worse. It was the 90s. It was still
awesome. It was still awesome because you kind of dressed up. You dressed up back then.
Yeah.
You know, today everybody's casual. You're casual. I'm casual. Yeah. Back then, everybody just dressed up. That's how it was.
When you left the house, it was the Gene Simmons thing. I still adhere to this to a certain extent. When you leave the house, you look like a star.
Right.
Especially for me. Like, I was wrestling. So I'm, you know, I'm a rock star. I'm a wrestler.
Bigger than life.
That's right.
So
that's,
you have to look bigger than life.
That's what you have to do. And if, you know, and at the time, you back dressed then, a little bit flamboyantly. Yeah.
Like now, like, you know, like a CM Punk or that Kevin Owens, that they just look like an everyday man. Mm-hmm. And everybody can relate to them. That's what it is right now. Back then, they would not have gotten over at all.
Well, yeah, I agree. And even if you look at rock bands, it's the same thing. You know, back at that time, if you were in a rock and roll band, and even like I saw the Stones a month ago, they look like rock stars. When they walk on stage, it might be a green, you know, LeMay silk suit or something, but still, it's something that you wouldn't see a guy in the crowd wearing.
Right.
I still believe in that a lot. But, yeah, so Mike and I were there. We went to Cuatro Milpas, which was the restaurant in Monterrey that Carlos Elizondo owned. And you guys had a show in Monterrey, and you went to the restaurant because you take care of the boys. And you kind of, like, it was you and Art. And I remember Art, giant wad of chewing tobacco, which he always had. What's up, brother? You know? And you guys didn't brush us off, but you were just kind of like, oh, there's a couple indie guys over there, like, whatever. You know, so it wasn't like... It was kind of like just brushed us off.
Yeah,
you did.
But we became friends real fast.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I don't blame you because it's not like at the time I didn't really know much about wrestling etiquette. And plus, what am I going to say? Hey, Conan and Art Barr, I knew you guys were. I'm here wrestling for, you know, I probably could have. But at the time, I just was kind of nervous. Yeah. I didn't know anybody.
Now, tell me, for your listeners, because I probably know this story, please tell them the infamous Easter Bunny story.
Great story. But I want, do you remember this though?
Yes.
Okay, well, I want to hear your take
on it. I'm in it.
Okay, I'll tell the story.
I said it.
I know, but I want to make sure that you don't, that you remember this. So me and Eddie were in the hotel in Plaza Madrid.
Los Plaza Madrid.
And you were there. You'd come to visit or to pick him up or just to hang around. You would come hang out once in a while. And this, at this point in time, you'll admit this, bro. Super big head, like big ego. So okay, here's Conan. What the does he want? Well, he wants to come hang out. He's always welcome to hang out, but you know, let's see what stupid shit he says today. So you guys had just gone to the mall in like Laredo or something,
and El Paso.
Okay,
yeah.
And it was there was a shopping mall. It was Easter, so around Easter time. It was actually Easter Sunday.
I remember the mall, Cielo Vista Mall, for all you guys in Chuco Town. Boom!
Shout out Cielo Vista Mall. And the Easter Bunny was there, and you had a crowd of people around you asking for your autograph because you're Conan. You had 10 people, and the Easter Bunny had 2. And you're like, I'm more over than the Easter Bunny on his day.
Boom!
Boom!
That's
you were kind of standing against like the window, and me and Eddie were standing. I remember me and Eddie looking, pulling faces at you, like this guy, like jacking off. Who's this guy? I think he is.
How did you put up with me then? If I had such a big ego,
I think we kind of all did, though.
But was there a part of me that was at least cool?
Well, yeah, of course.
When I was too busy talking about myself, or what was the deal?
Yeah, absolutely. You're a good guy. Yeah. You know, you're fun to hang out with, funny, you know, charismatic, but. Much like Vamp, although Vamp was way worse. You weren't half as bad as he was. Super popular and know it. You know, you knew it. So it was kind of the necessary evil. You know, okay, he's a nice guy, but he's going to say something stupid. Because that's just how it is. Just being in the ring with you puts you at a different level. Boom.
That sounds like something I would have said. Or you say level on this. Can't work. And he's telling us, bro, this is kind of a little bit sad for me, but one day, and I thought to myself, how long has he had this inside? One day we were in WCW, this was towards the end, and Eddie was super drunk, and he had me in the bathroom, and he was like, man, I just never understood, how was it possible that I could do everything in the ring, and all you had was muscles? He goes, and you were always more over than me. I'm like, wow, how long has he had this inside? But to me, Eddie may be the best in-ring performer I've ever been in with, ever.
You know, I say that, and I want to go back to Eddie. We were talking about that, how much of an influence you had in him turning heel, if any. But I think possibly one of the most total packages that ever graced the ring, as far as if he's a babyface, you love him. Like, love him. If he's a heel, you hate him. And that's one thing. It's hard to play both sides. Most guys are either good at, like Flair, great heel, not so good of a babyface in the ring. Eddie was immaculately great at both, and personality too. You know,
oh, here's the thing.
Creativity.
Because you knew him back then. Eddie was brutal on the mic. Brutal.
Yes.
In either language. He was incredible in WWE. I mean, incredible, bro. He had just taken it to
that
another
switch
level.
Flicked. I mean, whatever it was. Because like you said, with Los Gringos Locos, when Eddie and Art were together, yeah. Art was the talker, right. And Eddie was the walker. Right. Although Art could work too, but Eddie was just so far and above and beyond. That's why that team worked. But Eddie was not good as a character, no. You know, as a heel.
He just really picked it up when he went to WWE. But yeah, man, to me, it's so cool that some of the best guys to me that were the best workers, not just of my era or any era, because you could compare Eddie and Benoit in any era, you know, and I put you in that conversation. I put Rey Mysterio in that conversation, and that we were all such good friends. You know
yeah,
what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's cooler.
And that's the thing. We did have a really good connection with, you know, because I think it's because we came through the business the same way. Also, we spent that time in Las Plaza, Madrid.
Right.
You know, like we knew each other there when none of us, we were making some money, but we weren't rich.
Right.
I wasn't.
Right.
And as big as you could be in Mexico, it still didn't mean anything. On a worldwide basis, no one knew who the f*** we were.
Right.
Really, you know what I mean? Maybe in Japan, a couple people. Right. But that was about it. And I remember one time you asked me, I went to Germany for 6 weeks. And you're like, why are you going to Germany? Like, are you making money there? I'm like, well, not really. Like, why are you going? I'm just trying to spread my name.
Right.
You know? Because that's what we were doing, just trying to build
more places
a career.
That you would have work. Like, when you first went to Japan, nobody knew you. 3 years later, you're a name in Japan, you're a name in Germany, your name here, your name there. And
sooner or later, I figured if I keep doing this, as you or all of us, they'll have to acknowledge us in WWE, because that was the end game for me, was WWE.
Yeah.
And WCW was great, but still, I wanted to go to WWE. You know, that was kind of the place to go.
Now, one more story I need you to tell. The one about the being stopped at the checkpoint.
So, yeah, you just like hearing these stories of
They're
you just
awesome.
Being a dick to me. So I never worked any match ever in Mexico except for Paco Alonso.
Right.
Always treated me well, paid me good money, good push, whatever. Never had any desire. You asked me earlier why I didn't want to go to AAA. Never had any reason to. So finally, we do that.
Well, for my selfish reasons, I wanted you to be with me and Art and
yeah,
you know,
just
I
to
wanted,
hang out.
I wanted
right.
Magic to be.
But you know, it's funny. After Art died, Mexico was never the same.
No,
you know,
never.
It wasn't, because around the same time too, and I'll get to the story. But the same time that happened, the peso crashed.
Right.
Remember that?
Yes.
So it was before. I think it was like three into, like, if we were making 1,000 pesos a match, it'd be $333 American. Next day I show up and it's now divided by 7, like 150.
Right.
The economy just crashed.
Right.
Or government or whatever it was.
Right.
And Art had died about 2 weeks before that. And that was basically the end of Mexico for me. It was
right.
Sad. But we go and work the World Peace Festival.
Right.
Which, once again, I called and booked myself on that.
Really?
Because I wanted to try and get either into New Japan's view or WCW.
Who was running that?
I don't even remember who it was. I knew a guy named Martin Marin.
Martin. We actually sat by him at the PWG show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he knew somebody, whatever, and I was able to weasel my way onto this show, and I had no idea who I was working. When I got there, I was working against you and Bam Bam, which was a huge match for me. Like, I did not fit in with you two guys, but talk about a great way to be seen, because that was a good match.
Yeah, it was.
You know, I've never watched it since, but I remember it as being good.
Yeah.
So then you were like, okay, well, if you're coming down here, you should work a show for me and TJ in Tijuana. And I was like, all right, sure. I've never worked a AAA show, so I'll give it a shot. You know, I'm in the area. I can pick up whatever you paid me, $150 or whatever it was. And the deal was, I said, well, I got this.
Do you even remember who you wrestled or no?
No, do you?
No.
No, I just remember you had me rooming with La Parca.
That must have
been
awesome.
Which is scary. Yeah, La Parca, without his mask on, is a very unattractive human being.
Yes.
And he made me sleep on the couch, too.
Right.
So thank you for that
I'm
well.
I'm surprised his wife hasn't been sued for bestiality, but go ahead.
Hello Kitty said goodbye.
Yeah.
Boom. So the deal was, I said, dude, I got this flight out of L.A. back to Calgary, because I used my points to get there, had no money, And I said, I got to be back in L.A. by 7 o'clock. You're like, that's fine. Yeah, I'll fly you back to L.A. No problem. Cool. Thanks. Made the deal. It's a hotel. It's money. It's a guarantee. And it's a ticket back to L.A. Worked the match and crickets. No one gave a shit. None of the crowd knew who I was or whatever it was. Like, I was expecting I would go there and people were like.
You do remember that?
Yeah. Okay. Nothing. Like, yeah. To me at least, yeah. It was like pretty dead. Do the match, go back, spend the night with La Parca, which is great. Wake up, some guy's picking me up in the morning. He picks me up, and he takes me to the border and the bus station. And I'm like, oh, what's this? He's like, you're getting out here. I said, well, I got to go to San Diego to the airport. He goes, no. This is where you're leaving from. I said, well, it's okay. Carlos bought me a ticket. He goes, yeah, here's the ticket. And I look at the ticket, and it was like, I thought, okay, now it's not a plane ticket. It's a bus ticket. That sucks.
Right.
Like, it's supposed to be a plane ticket. The guy's like, I don't know. Get out of my car and F off. So I'm standing at this station. All right. So I go to the station. Like, no, this is not the station. You go over there. And I go over there, and it's a white Suburban. And I get in the white Suburban with, like, it's like a clown car, but with Mexican cowboys.
Right.
Like, you know, like the Mexican, you know, the guys wearing the Wranglers and the big hat.
Yeah.
And it was like the scene from Dumb and Dumber. Mock, see, yeah, see. And they're singing songs and they're playing music. And I'm sitting in the back with this bag on my leg because there's no room for any bags. And we're driving to L.A. from San Diego with 12 Mexican dudes and me. And they're all speaking Spanish. And, like, I don't know what the hell's going on. Like, this is like, I'm like, meanwhile, the whole time I'm thinking, I'm going to kill Conan because I see him. I'm going to kill him. So we're driving and then we pull over.
Yeah.
I'm like, why are we pulling over? It's a check stop. Check stop for what? We get out and the federales, immigrant cops, wanted to check everyone's passport in Spanish. Tu pasaporte or whatever. Tu pasaporte, whatever. Everyone's showing the passport and the guy comes to me. He goes, tu pasaporte. I'm like, here you go. He goes, Canadian passport? I said, yeah. He goes, what are you doing in this thing? I said, I'm just trying to get back to LA. He goes, do you know how dangerous this is? Because this is terrible. He said, you need to get out of this now. I'm like, but I got to go to LA. I said, can you give me a ride? The cop's like, no, I can't give you a ride. Then we can, meanwhile, now I'm really killing you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking ways as torture. I'm going to strip your skin off. I'm going to pluck your eyebrows out. Then when we get to LA, the outskirts, we start stopping because every guy needs to get out at a different spot. I finally get to the airport at like 5:05 for my flight at 7 to go through customs and everything like that. And now I'm really wanting to kill you. And that was the other, that was like the last time I ever worked in Mexico. So thanks.
That was Conan's revenge. Not Moctezuma's, but.
Yeah, for what though? I didn't do anything to you.
Just to be a dick.
So, you know, you talked about, I mean, your career has been so varied with all the different things you've done. And now you're involved in Lucha Underground as well.
Right.
How did you – I thought that was a really well-done show. I thought it was really different and cool and kind of a different spin on the tried-and-true wrestling show.
I think Lucha Underground, this is something that for many years me and Peña had tried to get people to buy into a Lucha Libre promotion because when we were in WCW or even WWE or TNA – we've always been like the appetizer or the side dish. We've never been the main entree. Mm-hmm. So I wanted a whole show to be Lucha Libre from top to bottom. And so we would go around and talk to all these millionaires. And they were always like, just to show you how strong his name was. You mean Hulk Hogan? Do you have Hulk Hogan?
Yeah.
They're like, no, we don't have Hulk Hogan. This is Lucha Libre. You know, and so they didn't understand it, you know. So finally we met up with the right people. And, you know, Robert Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm. Famous director.
Right. Machete, Spy Kids, you know, a lot of
Dust Till
movies
Dawn.
With Latin sensibility, but not just for Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mark Burnett, The Survivor, like, this guy's like the Spielberg of the, you know, reality shows. The Bible, The Voice.
So, yeah, so you were in the room pitching to them.
No, I wasn't in the room pitching to them. What happened was is we'd been pitching to a lot of people for many years, me and Peña. Then Dorian, his nephew, started to, he wanted to work with people. And then, I don't know if you ever heard of this promotion called Lucha Libre USA.
Mm-hmm.
It was on the air for a little while. So we were working with that guy. He was like a promoter from Canada who did concerts. But he knew nothing about Lucha and thought that the same, you know, schematics or blueprint for a rock concert, you could do it for wrestling. I was like, no, bro, it's two different animals.
Right.
And on top of that, the worst part is he didn't want to listen.
Hmm.
And so basically, we had to wait till we got out of our contract with him. And then this guy called Antonio Cue, who used to own the Chivas, which is a soccer team, but the U.S. version, because there's one in Guadalajara. He had met Dorian, and he introduced him to this guy called John Fogelman. John Fogelman is at El Rey, and he used to work for the Philip Morris agency, like one of the youngest guys to run it. Mm-hmm. And he had a lot to do with Transformers, Hasbro Transformers hooking up. And, you know, he works with J.J. Abrams as his representative.
Well connected.
I mean, he's a power broker. So he was like the incubator to bring Burnett, Rodriguez, Triple A, everybody together, El Rey. Hmm. So that was kind of like,
yeah, because Triple A would have to be involved too, because most of the talent is their guys.
Right. So we got together, and, you know, at first it was very, 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 very science fiction, way too much. And I was like, bro, I don't think this is going to work. But again, it wasn't my call. You know, they would consult on me for a couple of things. Dory mostly would. But I think what happened, the pros and the cons of Lucha Underground is, as edgy as I think I am, I'm still in a way enclosed by the parameters of my industry, of things that are considered acceptable or not acceptable by the people that are of higher pay grade above mm-hmm. me. And so we would have never been able to do this show with wrestling people, because these people are thinking so outside of the box that it wouldn't allow us to have that same vision. Mm. So they brought that to the game, which we could never have, because we're still, as much as we don't like to admit it, in the wrestling bubble,
yeah.
Right. And so, but there are other things that they don't understand. They don't understand work rate. They don't understand a lot of other things that wrestling insiders would know, but that's what they have agents for, and mm-hmm. you know. So, you know, they basically wanted to be an all lucha show, and then have these have you seen the backstage scenes?
Yeah. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, that look very cinematographic, yeah, and it just and then gives it a movie or a miniseries feel. Mm. You know, they brought that to the game. And do you remember one time I tried to do a show that I actually brought you on?
Yeah.
In there was going to be a Lucha
Waco
show.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Waco, Texas. It was all going to be, and it was really cool. Remember
that's right.
That?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what happened was, is, you know, I brought in like all the best workers from WCW. I brought in all the best workers from Mexico.
All the guys who weren't getting used. I remember. I had Lenny Lane and Norman and Finley on my team.
Well, all the best workers were us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who on top was a great worker.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So basically, I had all the great workers and with great attitude. And at the end of the day, and you saw how much money they spent on the set. Mm-hmm. It looked like an old Western saloon. They had these badass bitches dancing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And production went to Eric. They go, are you kidding me with this Spanish show?
Mm-hmm.
And they cut it.
Oh, that's why it never even aired.
Yeah.
They just didn't like the idea of it after a while?
It was too much work.
Gotcha, yeah. Well, what's the business model for Mexico now as we start to wind down? Is business strong in Mexico?
Yeah, business is strong because with Ray coming in and Mysticis, who didn't do good in WWE as Sin Cara, but he was like the...
huge star.
Like after me and Vampiro, 15 years passed.
Wow.
The next big...
He was at that level.
Yeah, he was that next big megastar.
Hmm.
And so...
Why do you think he didn't do good in WWE?
I'm pretty positive a couple reasons. Number one, he asked and they acquiesced. Not a bad word.
Jeez, you're just throwing them out here. Now spell it. Sarcophagus.
A-C-Q-U-I-S-E-D.
I'll take it. Okay. That's not bad.
Yeah, and I'm in Iran. So
he acquiesced or he asked?
He
acquiesced?
Yeah.
He asked them to acquiesce?
Yeah. What was the question again?
aren't you listening?
I'm high. You hear the guy knock on the door? Tell the people what happened.
We almost got busted. Carlos went aside for a nip, and the security guard came and knocked on the door and said, "Were you outside smoking marijuana?" And I said, "No." A lady saw you outside. She said, "She didn't see me outside. I haven't been outside all day." And that was, you almost got me busted 5 minutes after you got here.
That's awesome.
There you go. So we're talking about Mysticis and why he didn't do good in WWE.
So he went and he asked WWE and they acquiesced not to go to the Performance Training Center or NXT or FCW, whatever was going on back then. So, you know, like us, when we went to WCW, we need to be deprogrammed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I was like, Lucha, High Spot, High Spot.
Sure.
Like,
yeah, me too. Yeah.
And so I need to be, he never got deprogrammed.
Yeah.
And then they put him in. I don't think Chavo was the right guy for him. you know?
Yeah.
And so they needed to put him in with people in his element, or he needed to go to the training center like ADR did.
Yes.
ADR went there for a year and a half, got deprogrammed, and then he was awesome.
And you know what else Alberto did? Yep. It's the most obvious thing. We did it there. He learned how to speak English.
Yeah.
I learned how to speak Spanish when I worked in Mexico.
Right.
Because if you don't, you're not going to be as good.
Yeah.
Because I don't care what you say. If you don't, A, to me, it showed that he didn't care.
Right.
And B, how are you supposed to call a match with the guy?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Bro, how are you supposed to order food or
everything?
This ain't Japan. I remember when I first went to Japan, I don't know if they still have this now. You know how you would go to the store and they'd have all the food like in a plastic representation?
A little example of it, yeah. You point at it, yeah. That's what they like. Just point at this one. So I think that might have been one of his issues. But last question. You've had a lot of matches over the years. What, if you had to pick one or two of them as your favorite matches that you ever had, could you do it?
No.
Not even one?
No. No, 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 no. No, it's just very hard. I just know, like, you were one of my favorite guys to work with, because I remember when we did the and the reason they took it off you is because you were leaving the WWE when you had
TV
the U.S. title.
Or U.S. title, yeah.
Yeah. So we were like in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Is that what
And I remember saying? I was real, real hot at that time. I was like on a university or some shit. And the people were really hot, and you were leaving, and so they were putting it on me, and I just wanted to make sure that we had a great match because it was your last match. And I remember telling you after the match, because you were the heel, and I was like, man, bro, you know, you're just a general in the ring. You know what to do, because you were calling a lot of shit.
I remember
in the
ring,
and you really made it really easy for me. And that was a really good match, I remember.
You know, I remember that. It wasn't quite the end, but what happened was that I didn't sign this contract that Bischoff wanted me to sign. And he said, if you don't sign it today, you're losing the TV title. And I was like, fine. You're going to lose it to Conan? Great. Love working with Conan. See ya. And I remember I told you, remember you did the Tequila Sunrise was your submission. I said, I want you to put that on as a shoot. Because sometimes you put it on kind of lazy, and I'm like, I'll tap out to it, but you better put it on where it looks good.
Yeah.
And you did.
Yeah, I almost ripped your leg off. But,
well, dude, we got to go to work, but man, it's good talking to you, man.
All right. Yeah. Thank you for having me on. Do you hear that sound?
What is it?
That is a sound of ratings.
Conan's revenge. For what? I'm not sure. All right, Conan has to come back so we can roll through some of the useless pop culture trivia and tell some more stories. I want to do it with Raven. The useless trivia triumvirate gets together, Raven, Conan, Jericho, in the same room together. That would be a podcast filled with hilarity and ridiculousness. I'm going to work on that for you guys. But if you want to listen to another great podcast and you want to hear more Conan, he's got his own podcast, MLW Radio, and you can check it out on mlwradio.com. It's a great, great podcast. Conan, very well spoken, very smart about the business, and a great sense of humor as well, as you can hear with this. Thank you so much to Conan for being here. Once again, mlradio.com. Go check out his podcast. And the Cinderblock Party Tour. You want to check that out? We're rolling through England. We've got Nonpoint and Sumo Psycho with us. It's been so much fun, man. Just been a blast. And tonight we play Manchester, England at the Sound Control. Saturday is Chester, England. Sunday, Southampton. Then next week, the last few dates of the year and of the Cinderblock Party Tour. Birmingham, Cambridge, Newcastle, Nottingham, Sheffield, and Treco Bay, Wales. Great rock festival there. Come check us out, the last few dates of the Cinderblock Party Tour. And if you've ever wondered about Fozzy VIP, this is the best VIP package we've ever done, with the private pre-mini concert. The private mini concert that we play for the VIPs. I had Pascal from the Netherlands come on stage and sing Cold Gin with us the other day. You want to come on stage and sing with Fozzy? You want to ask us some questions? You want to see some tunes that we don't normally play in the set? That is what the VIP is all about. We finally nailed it. I'm really, really excited about it. Come check it out. Go to FozzyRock.com for all VIP information and all gig information. Don't forget, we are coming. We're rocking. I'm excited. Don't miss out, England. We love you. One of our favorite countries in the world to play to. And one of my favorite things to do is a Talk is Jericho podcast. I'm really, really been enjoying it over the last couple of years. Thanks to you guys who've been with us from the start, who might have just listened to one episode, maybe just starting today. If you just starting listening to the show, welcome to Talk is Jericho. Hope you dug it. And if you download it for free, you know you're downloading it for free because of our incredible sponsors like DraftKings.com. Play for free when you use my promo code YTJ. DDP Yoga. Don't forget, you can win an autographed copy of DDP Yoga by tweeting your very own DDP Yoga experience and story to me at Talk Is Jericho on the Twitter and use that hashtag podcast1. And then brand new sponsor, Tommy John. Use my promo code Jericho to get 20% off your first order. Upgrade your underwear and t-shirts and socks now. You won't regret it. And of course, thanks to Amazon, the longest running sponsor of Talk Is Jericho. Easiest way to support the show. I got Amazon links for the USA, the UK, the Canada A. Every time you use the Talk Is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the show to help us cover production costs. I tell you, holidays are coming up. Got to buy some presents. Go do it on Amazon. No extra fees or hidden challenges. You just do it through the Talk Is Jericho links and help us all continue to rock this podcast. Talk Is Jericho. Next week, still kind of putting some stuff together, but I'm telling you right now, it's the 200th episode. It's going to be huge. It's going to be big. It's going to be, well, exactly what you expect from Talk Is Jericho for the last 199 episodes. Thank you, guys. It's going to be a big surprise. I'll let you know what it's going to be next week. So we'll see you soon. Stay hard. Stay cool. Stay hungry. And a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk Is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.